Trust me, you're going to love this.
This is Up to the Minute with Nicole.
Up to the Minute with Nicole.
Your weekly exploration of the world of fashion and design. Find out what to wear,
what's hot,
what's not,
the latest trends in fashion, and more.
Here's your host, Nicole Steinthal.
Hello, welcome to Up to the Minute with Nicole. We will be here every Friday from 11 to 12 on www.talkzone.com. This show is based upon my blog, NS Lifestyles, featuring fashion, family, and fun. Today, we are speaking with Dr. Elsa Raskin. Hi, Dr. Raskin. How are you?
Hi, Nicole.
So nice to have you on the show.
Thank you.
I have so many questions for you. A lot of my listeners and readers wrote in, so we're going to definitely get started and get some of these questions answered. Dr. Raskin, tell us, what is your background?
So I grew up in Geneva, Switzerland, where I went to medical school, and then I did my medical graduate training here in general surgery at NYU and plastic surgery at Cornell. And in addition, I did, ophthalmology at New York Eye and Ear. So I've been in practice for over 10 years, and I transferred to Greenwich 10 years ago, actually, when we decided to raise our family here. And I'm on staff at Greenwich Hospital, and I'm still on staff in at Lenox Hill in Manhattan. But I mostly do my surgeries here, either at Greenwich Hospital or in my private office, where I have a private operating room.
We're here today in the office, which is so beautiful. I've had a tour here, and there's the operating room on premise. It's really quite amazing, all of the things that go on here. So I hope we touch upon a lot of those today. So you told us that you have the operating room here, and you're on staff at Greenwich Hospital and in New York Hospital. But what else about the practice?
So the fact that we have an operating room here, you know, makes a big difference for our patients because it is more private of a setting, and also it is more affordable because we don't have to add the fees of a larger hospital. Patients come in and they have intravenous, which is twilight sedation, and they basically come in and out. And in this setting, I've done a lot of things, breast augmentations, facelifts, eyes, liposuction, breast lifts. One can really do a lot just with twilight. Then in addition, in the office, we have like a mini spa where we have some laser treatments for hair laser removal and photo facials. And then we do the peels, of course. We have a physician assistant that comes and does that.
Wonderful. So just tell us, what's the schedule? Are there procedures every day? Are there certain days? Are you consultation certain days?
We tend to do our surgeries Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, mm-hmm. because the patients like the end of the week to recover, but we are very flexible. We can do them any day. And the rest of the time is filled with consultations, and Tuesday, typically, I go to the operating room in Greenwich Hospital to do, I still do breast reconstruction. So it's a very flexible schedule, but yes, mostly Fridays is when we do the surgeries in the office.
Okay, great. So how many procedures would you say you perform on average a month?
Surgeries, because we do...
Let's break it up. Let's say surgery.
For instance, let's say I do an earlobe repair, mm-hmm. or I remove a mole. I don't call that a surgery. Mm-hmm. So that's a procedure. But a surgery that requires anesthesia would be probably three to four a week.
Okay. It's a lot.
Yes. And, you know, then I do, for instance, you know, you tear your earlobe and you have a hole, and I do that under local. I don't count that as a surgery.
What about injectables?
Injectables. That depends on the days, but it depends, you know, I do them every day, you know, between 2 patients to 10 patients a day. Okay. It's very popular. And I think, you know, nowadays we can do a better job by putting less and doing it more often. There's a lot of new products out there that I can touch upon in another, if you would like. But we can really maintain the person's appearance and skin tone for a long, long time. But at some point then, you know, I think I also, what I would say is that the best thing about a plastic surgeon is that we do surgeries and we do injectables. So we're not going to have a BAs about, you know, just do injectables or just do surgeries. I think we do what's best for the patient.
Okay. Someone had written in to me asking this question. And cosmetically, they'd like to know, what's the number one procedure or surgery that patients ask for?
I think statistically, if you look like at the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, the number one procedure is Botox, mm-hmm. and the number one surgery is liposuction.
Really?
If you look in the country-wise,
yeah. Wow.
It's not necessarily the, I mean, for my practice, I also do a lot of Botox. Mm-hmm. And for procedure, I would say between eyes, Botox, eyes liposuction, and breast augmentation.
Wow. So now what about for the patient that's really apprehensive about surgery? Are there any alternatives to having the actual surgery? Is there anything?
It depends what type of surgery. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's say, in general, if you want a really drastic result and you want something that really makes a change with the anatomy that you have, there's nothing that will replace surgery. We have a lot of, you know, I would say patients who bounce back from CoolSculpt, for instance, which is an outside non-invasive liposuction formula. What I found is that they do that and they paid a lot of money and it was painful, and then they come to us. We have Smart Lipo in the office, and that really takes the fat out. And it's invasive, but we're talking about incisions that are about the size of a mosquito bite. So, you know, I would much rather see a result and see that, you know, fat has come out and it's not a melting process where I'll be disappointed at the end.
So that is called, what was that called?
Well, what we do here is Smart Lipo.
Smart Lipo. Yeah. As opposed, do you do cool sculpting?
No, I don't do sculpting. Okay. I think the results are not reliable. And so I have a lot of patients who have done cool sculpt elsewhere mm-hmm. who come to us to do Smart Lipo afterwards.
Smart Lipo. And that is the very small injection.
It's like liposuction with a laser. Mm-hmm. And then you have a three-step process. First, you numb the patient. And then you do a laser, and then you take the fat out, you suction the fat.
Okay. What do patients need to do to prepare for surgery?
A couple of good things are to be as fit as possible, to stop drinking wine, stop smoking. We don't allow any smokers to have plastic surgery because the smoking affects the way you heal wounds. And it's pretty much it. If you have medical issues, you need to see an internist, you know, to optimize, you know, your blood pressure medication or whatnot.
Okay. So basically, I know people think they're going to come in, they need to lose weight, and they're going to do liposuction because it's a quick fix. But that's not the case. You really have to become as fit as possible and be close to your recommended weight.
Okay. Yes, it is. You know, I've done all sorts. I have patients who have really reached a plateau, mm-hmm. and then I tell them, well, you have exercised all you can. Let's do a little liposuction, and you go back to exercising. And I don't always take patients in the ideal weight because some patients cannot get there, and they try very hard, and I see that they try very hard. So, you know, I try to understand what they're going through. So I do a liposuction first, and I tell them you might need a second session, mm-hmm. you know, after you keep exercising. And I think when patients do an investment, they say, I'm going to do this surgery and I'm going to invest and spend a fair amount of money, they feel like it's serious and they need to do their homework because I cannot do it all alone.
Right.
Okay.
So it's like a joint. Do people lose a significant amount of weight with liposuction, or is it more problem area kind of?
It's more problem area and volume. Remember, fat doesn't weigh a lot. Fat is very light but occupies a lot of space. Mm-hmm. So when one does liposuction, you actually are going to decrease your waist size of 1 or 2 inches. But as far as the weight itself, it might only be 1 or 2 pounds.
Mm-hmm. So it's mostly for like contouring. If people have saddlebags or underarm.
Yes, right. It's very successful under the neck, for instance. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of happy patients, basically.
Wonderful. Okay, so you explained that you have, and you showed me your operating room here. So when would you do a procedure here as opposed to the hospital, as opposed to the city?
Okay, well, the hospital would be if you need general anesthesia, or if we are going through your insurance. Let's say I'm doing a breast reduction and it's going through an insurance plan, that I have to go to the hospital because that's how it's mm-hmm. Accepted, basically. If you're doing a tummy tuck, mostly I do it at the hospital, breast reconstruction. So everything else is done in the office.
Okay. And that would be local anesthesia? Would that be here? Or
that would be local with intravenous sedation. It's called Twilight. It's the same type of anesthesia you have if, let's say, you're going to have a colonoscopy.
Okay. Yeah.
So you feel like you're having a cocktail and you're relaxed, but you don't remember anything I've done.
Okay, wow. And you don't feel anything.
You don't feel anything. Okay. And then you need a ride to come here and after to get picked up, and you need to sit in recovery room for 1 or 2 hours after the procedure. It's a little bit like going to the airport. You have to check in, you have to go to security, you have the actual flight, and then when you land, you need, a few more procedures before you can actually take off.
Right. Okay, great. Do you have medical staff here that assist in the surgery, or... is it just all you?
We have nurses that come per diem, and we have physician assistants that come per diem. So let's say when I have a surgery, they all come in. They're not here necessarily around the clock, but they come in specifically for the procedure.
Okay. How about risks associated with certain surgeries, with the tummy tuck, with the breast enhancement or reduction?
Well, I think if you go interview a surgeon and they tell you there's no risks, you should really run away because there's always risks for surgeries. I think the key is to go to someone who's done a lot and has been out for a long time. In my case, specifically to each procedure, I will describe what risks you have. Let's say you can have bleeding after surgery, you can have an infection. I found that most patients who had those complications are patients who did not follow the postoperative instructions. If you go vacuum your entire house after you have a breast augmentation, you will have a bleed, and that might lead to a complication. But if you follow instructions, you're less likely.
Okay. How about Botox? I know people, I'll see these, oh my gosh, these plastic surgery shows that have nightmare, situations that happen. I mean, is it common to bruise after Botox, or is there anything?
You shouldn't be bruised after Botox. I mean, sometimes you have a little blood vessel around the eyes and you can have a bruise, but not too much. More commonly, fillers, if they are done around the mouth, could give you a bruise, but it's always temporary. The key to all those things is to not give you a face that's very plastic and rigid, to have maintain the movement. And if you follow all the, common sense, and if you have a good artistic eye, it is not a problem at all.
Great. Well, thank you so much. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back.
You're listening to Up to the Minute with Nicole. Back to Nicole Steinthal.
Hi, welcome to Up to the Minute with Nicole. We're here in Dr. Elsa Raskin's office in Greenwich, Connecticut, and she is talking to us about plastic surgery and everything, all the wonderful things that she does here in her office. We were just talking about some of the risks of surgery and Botox. And now we're just going to ask you, how should patients manage surgical side effects or complications?
Do you want to pick one in particular? The complications, if God forbid...
Like you said, somebody was overdoing it when they get home and they had some kind of breast surgery or a tummy tuck, and then they have the bleeding or, mm-hmm. you know, what do they do after?
Well, I always keep my cell phone on mm-hmm. and every patient I operate on has my cell phone. So they call me directly. They don't have to go through a service. And if something like that happens, God forbid, I either meet them in the emergency room or at my office. It is extremely rare. Mm-hmm. So maybe in 10 years I had one patient because, you know, I'm very meticulous and I check and double check three times before I leave the operating room. Mm-hmm. You have to remember most patients are happy. Most patients have very good results. They're happy. They don't have complications. They
not too many side effects.
Not too many side effects. I mean, the side effects might be that you're tired a little bit from the anesthesia, mm-hmm. you have a little bit of pain, soreness, bruising, swelling. That's expected. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't have a magic wand, and there will still be a recovery phase.
And what about for the Botox? Other than you said sometimes maybe a little
so the
bit
Botox,
or fillers.
The Botox sometimes doesn't take right away. You have side effects and complications of Botox. If you inject too close to the brow can droop. But if it's well done, it can give you a very natural, smooth forehead. But it might need that. You might need an adjustment 1 week later. And a lot of doctors do that for free. I do that for free in my office. You know, you need a little tweaking. The fillers, you know, basically, you know, it gives you a very nice smooth result. You should not have a lot of lumps and bumps. And if you do, there is a product that one can use to remove a lump that it's, if it, you feel like it's too much.
Mm-hmm. Which is why we're interviewing you today, because we want to give our listeners and our readers a wonderful option and a doctor to call on when mm-hmm. they decide that they need this. Because I know, people say, oh, you get a Groupon on the computer for Botox, and they say run away from that because you really want to go to a doctor that is going to give you good results and is professional, and you know, you can't just go to any old person for Botox.
No,
you have to be careful.
Everybody is trying to do those aesthetic procedures because they bring revenue, mm-hmm. but do look for a professional and look for someone who's done a lot.
And no Groupons.
No Groupons mm-hmm. at all, not here. This is not the time to save money. And you'll be surprised. Actually, the prices are more affordable than you think. And sometimes plastic surgeons are actually more affordable than dermatologists because mm-hmm. This is not our main source of revenue. Another interesting filler that is more permanent and very natural is your own fat. So now we've started to go, it's a new field in plastic surgery, is to basically harvest your fat, purify it, and inject in the areas of your face that have lines.
And where do you take it from?
You know,
the buttocks or
abdomen.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Wherever.
Many places.
Wherever
right?
there is.
A little yeah. extra.
And that patients, you know, the downside is that you are swollen for more time. And you can get a less predictable result in terms of volume because some of the fat melts away or doesn't survive. Mm-hmm. But the upside is that it's a very smooth and natural filler and it's your own body. So that is a new and upcoming method that we have. And I do this right here in my office as well.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So you don't have to go to the hospital for any kind of filler or Botox that's done right.
None of that.
You don't need anesthesia. Do you put like a numbing cream or nothing?
A numbing cream, yes.
Numbing cream a little bit.
It's your choice.
Yeah.
If you want a numbing cream, you get a numbing cream, yes.
Do most people opt for the numbing cream? It looks painful when you see people in the housewives doing it.
If they do the lips, around the lips, yes. I always like to give them a numbing cream for at least 20 minutes. So they sit for half an hour,
right.
you know, in the private right. room while they have a newspaper, read a newspaper. And this way it takes the edge off.
Wow. Okay. That's good to know because I think people get afraid that it's going to really hurt a lot in those sensitive areas. So it's nice to know that that's an option for people. So I wanted to ask you about the recovery from a surgery. How long is a recovery? What can you not do during the recovery time? Are you limited with driving or?
Okay, so every surgery has a specific answer mm-hmm. to that question. So would you like me to pick one?
Why don't we do a couple? So why don't we do like let's do liposuction, breast surgery, and
Okay, so let's see liposuction. Liposuction is an easy one. If you were mm-hmm. to do that today on Friday, mm-hmm. I would ask you to wear a garment around the clock for 1 week. you can go back to work on Monday. Mm-hmm. If you had sedation here, I would want someone to pick you up from the office. The next day, you could absolutely go about your activities, drive, go food shopping, go to work, drop off your kids at school. Most patients take only Tylenol after liposuction. They don't need Vicodin or any narcotics. And then 1 week later, I remove your sutures, and then I'll ask you to still wear garments for another 2 weeks.
And is that the same with the smart liposuction, too?
That is with the smart liposuction, yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great. And then what about for the breast?
So let's say you have a breast augmentation. Depending on where the implant is placed, if it's under the muscle, it can be a little bit more painful. But under, if you put the implant under your breast, you are sore for probably 24 hours. It feels like you've done a lot of push-ups with a mean personal trainer. Mm-hmm. You take some Vicodin, and after 24 hours, you can pretty much go to Tylenol. You need a sports bra that you will wear for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And at 1 week, I remove the sutures if there is any to remove. Usually, they're all resorbable. And I would like to not have very heavy, and that applies to liposuction or any other surgery, not have a strenuous activity for 3 weeks. So you mm-hmm. can go to walking and, a stationary bike after 1 week. But as far as strenuous activity, like, gym class or biking outdoors or playing tennis, I would want you to mm-hmm. wait for 3 weeks.
What about driving? Is driving okay?
You can drive, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. When you have a breast augmentation, sometimes your arms are a little bit sore, and mm-hmm. depending on how big the car is, you might want to wait a few days. Mm-hmm. But definitely 2 days later, you can drive.
How about tummy tuck? I hear that's a very difficult surgery.
Tummy tuck is probably the most painful thing we do. Mm. And patients are up and about in one day, but they are a little more sore, and they need help. Sometimes they have drains, and the drains come out two or three days later. The incision is bigger. I try to avoid tummy tucks as much as I do as I can because I have the smart liposuction now. But if someone really has a lot of hanging skin, that's the only way to give them a good result. And yes, they might need Vicodin for a couple of days, and they are sore, and they will do, limited activity for 1 week.
Okay. So most of our inquiries that we got were about injectables. People have a lot of questions. There's a lot of things that maybe people are intimidated. They don't know when's the right time to start. So can you explain the injectable procedures that you perform?
So I only do what makes you look natural and not, ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, the best thing to do is to trust your doctor. If you come here, it's very different from person to person. And, I would inject what is bothering you and what makes you look better. In other words, I always choose the anatomical location that will improve your face the most. If you need your cheeks or you need the folds around your mouth, that is what I will do. You don't have to go overboard, and you don't have to spend a lot of money. And if you're on a budget, you can do this twice a year. Most people do it every 4 months mm-hmm. to maintain. Mm-hmm. But if you want to do it every 6 months, that's fine too, or you can alternate. Just a little bit like, color and haircut. Sometimes you choose to have the color done, sometimes you choose to have the haircut done. So you can alternate what you're doing to give you a more natural result.
Oh, that's good to know. So mm-hmm. every 4 months to 6 months.
Right.
Pretty much recommended
right.
by you. Okay. At what age do you recommend starting? Is there too young an age, too late? Like, what's the ideal?
We all age differently and mm-hmm. we have different skin tones, but I would say definitely late 30s, mid 40s, you mm-hmm. can start mm-hmm. with little things. And then you can carry injectables. I have patients in my practice who are 75, 80 years old who are still doing it. When you're close to 60, you are at the age where you should start considering doing a facelift, mm-hmm. and facelifts have better results, between the ages of 55 and 65 when your skin is still elastic, mm-hmm. When you're not your skin is not too thin. And then you can continue to do a combination of fat grafting, facelifting. And again, when I do facelift, it's always a mini facelift, a mini incision that no one will know. It goes around your earlobe. And the key is to not pull too tight. Unfortunately, bad facelifts are a little bit like airplane crashes. You only hear about the bad ones and you only see the bad ones. But you are going to be surprised. There's a lot of people who have good work around you and you don't know it. And that's because it was actually done correctly.
Great. So is this a myth? But they say, I read sometimes, like, if you start your injectables early, then you're putting off having a facelift too young. Is that true or there's no correlation?
You can put it off a little bit. Mm-hmm. So there is some truth in that, mm-hmm. because you are feeling you're giving yourself a little bit of volume, but eventually, you know, your skin will pretty much dictate that you need a facelift.
Gravity takes over.
And yes.
Okay.
But you could delay your facelift by 5 years by doing injectables.
Really? That's very interesting. Okay. So, let's see. Are injectables better for one person over another? Is there somebody who's not a good candidate, or is it for everybody?
Well, if you have a phobia of needles, if you're afraid of needles or you have a very low pain threshold, it's not that painful, certain needle pricks, but I rarely
But the numbing cream helps a lot with that, right?
The numbing cream takes the edge off, yes.
Okay.
I don't really can think of anyone to which it's not good. I mean, I always find little things to do and it really has to have the patient and tell me, you know, this is bothering me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if nothing bothers you, by all means, don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to get back when you said the cost, it definitely would be maybe less than you think it would be. About that numbing cream, is that additional or is that offered to every patient?
It's included.
It's included. Okay, great. It's just good to know that. Okay, getting back to our, let's see, is there a recovery process for injectables? We talked a little bit about this, but not.
So I give you ice packs when you are injected here, mm-hmm. and I am always very careful to not bruise my patients. In mm-hmm. fact, I have you put your head between your legs.
Okay.
So that your veins pop out.
Okay.
And then I draw them with a marker, and so I can avoid the veins that way. It's a very special technique that I came up with it myself.
Really?
But even with that, one can get a little bruise every so often, mm-hmm. and if you get a little black and blue, it usually comes up one day later. You just ice it.
And it goes back up. Okay, we're going to take another break and come back with some more injectable questions. Thank you so much, Dr. Kraft.
And now, back to Up to the Minute with Nicole. Here's Nicole Steinthal.
Hi, welcome back. We're here with Dr. Elsa Raskin, plastic surgeon in Greenwich, Connecticut. We are talking about injectables before the break. We were just saying if injectables were better for one person over another, and we determined that if you're afraid of needles, maybe not, but you were mentioning about the numbing cream, which definitely helps take the edge off. So you just think if it really bothers you and you feel like you have a lot of wrinkles or sun damage, then come in and get a consultation and see what can be done. Correct?
Right. And sometimes you might want to come in for injectables, but I would say to you, we know your skin has a lot of sunspots, a lot of pigmentation. Why don't we put you on track of doing chemical peels and then IPLs to just have a clean canvas first, you know, before or after or during the injectables, because I think that the skin quality is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes along with, you know, the general treatment.
Okay, so if somebody makes an appointment for an injectable, can they expect that you yourself will do the injectable or does somebody on your staff do it?
I do all the injectables
myself. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. And how long does the effects last? Like, ideally, we said anywhere from 4 months to 6 months, but do we really start to notice a change? I mean, is four better than six, or do you start to see?
So the results are immediate for mm-hmm. the injectables. You see your result right away. Mm-hmm. And you can maintain them for 4 months. Mm-hmm. After that, it's a gradual decrease. Mm-hmm. So it's still there a little bit, but it sort of goes away completely at 6 months.
Just sort of fades away. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now I wanted to this is a twofold question. So let's say we have somebody coming in. They want to have a consultation, and I want you to walk us through the steps of somebody who comes in for a consultation to the end is a surgery or a consultation for an injectable. So what do they – let's start with surgery.
Okay. So let's say you have a young mother who comes in. She had 3 children, and she comes and she wants a mommy makeover. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. a very popular term we see nowadays. So they have to book a consultation. They come in, and there's a consultation fee. After that, they interview with me. I basically make them feel comfortable. I ask them specifically what they want to address. And then I show them pictures of before and afters. And I also get a sense from them to see if they're reasonable in what they want to achieve, because there are things that, you know, we cannot do. After I spend about an hour with them discussing all the risks and the benefits and how it's done, usually I have my office manager come in and discuss the price with them. And let's say they would want to go ahead, I could take pictures that day. And then they have to go home, usually check the calendar, pick a date, call us back, and then they pick a date. If we do the surgery in the office, we put together a team for the surgery. And in the meantime, I ask them to just go check their labs. They need mm-hmm. blood work to make sure everything is in order. If they have medical problems, they need clearance by the internist. And basically, they have surgery. The day of surgery, we provide them with garments. They go home. I check on them the next day. I check on them several times during that week. And then they pretty much are healed and ready to go 3 weeks later and recovered.
So from the time of consultation to the actual surgery, once they get all their bloods done, is that like a week time, 2 weeks?
It depends on the time of of the year. Right now it's very popular.
Okay.
If you were to come in the middle of August when nobody is in town, you can probably get your surgery the next week.
Okay.
But right now we're pretty booked.
Okay. So like a month?
Like a month.
Okay.
Right.
What about injectable?
Injectables, basically, you know, you can get an appointment in 2 or 3 weeks, and you can get done the same day.
Same day. Mm-hmm. So is there a consultation for that, or it's just same day?
Same day consultation.
Okay. Wonderful.
Right.
Great. Okay. So I hear this procedure, like touch-ups. Do people who have surgery, like, do they need any breast surgery? Do they need a touch-up after a certain time? Tummy tuck, lipo, what is the touch-up? Like, or is it good for a while?
It's good for a while. You know, maybe with a liposuction, you might have an area that is under-treated and might be needed a little bit more. In general, you don't need any touch-ups.
No. Okay. And so other than is it the same for a filler and Botox about every 4 months?
It's the
same.
Okay,
it's the same for both. Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Can multiple procedures be done at the same time? Can you do Botox and a filler or a tummy tuck and liposuction
Yes, if the person is healthy, definitely for fillers. I mean, I always do more than one filler at once. I do a Botox, and I can do radius on your cheeks and then something else on the lips, mm-hmm. Like Juvederm. Mm-hmm. I use everything that's out there on the market.
So Juvederm is a filler. Is there another?
Radius is a filler. Okay. Bolotero is a filler. Restylane is a filler.
Yes.
Those are all the names you hear a lot.
Yeah, see in the magazine.
Basically, the hyaluronic acids that you have in your joints. So you already have those products in your joints. That's why they're very natural and they're not going to cause you harm.
Okay. But Botox is just Botox.
Botox is Botox. Okay. Botox is a little mini toxins that's very diluted and will not cause any damage whatsoever.
Okay. Great. I think we talked a little bit about a complicated surgery. What's the most complicated surgery? Was it the tummy tuck, or can it be something?
Well, I mean, the very complicated surgeries are microsurgeries mm-hmm. with free flaps mm-hmm. that are done in university hospitals. They're not done. Mm-hmm. I don't do those in my practice anymore. Mm-hmm. I would say the most complicated surgery I would do now, it's not, I don't want to make it sound like it's difficult for me because I do a lot of them, but the more complex surgery would be, for instance, a facelift.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're dissecting around the facial nerve and around the face, and you're repositioning the fat in a cheek.
So that would be done in the hospital?
No, it's done here.
Oh, it's done here. Because of local anesthesia.
Yes.
Wow,
IV
that's
sedation.
Really impressive.
It's local anesthesia here in the face, and then IV sedation in the vein.
Oh, wow. Okay, so what types of anesthesia are used, and who administers those?
So in the office, we do IV sedation, and it's an anesthesiologist. Mm-hmm. And in the hospital, it's either IV sedation or general anesthesia, and it's also an anesthesiologist.
Okay, an anesthesiologist. Great. So just let's review the types of non-invasive body procedures that we could get done if we come to you.
Non-invasive body procedures. So non-invasive, I would call smart lapo non-invasive because the incisions are very small. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, it's little mosquito bites.
Mm-hmm.
So that pretty much is it. The breast augmentations that I do, I use a funnel technique. So I put the breast implants through incisions that are 1 inch or less.
That's small. Yeah.
So it's almost qualifies as non-invasive.
And do you have before and after pictures on your website?
I have on my website. I have some. A lot of patients don't want to be on the website, so it's a limited choice, but I have pictures, yes.
Excellent. And we will also be putting the show up on our Talk Zone page with a link to your website, and it would also be on my blog as well, so you can easily get in touch with Dr. Raskin, look at her website, contact her for a consultation. And then I just wanted to say about these non-invasive procedures. So is it the same process for the smart lipo? Is it so as like a regular lipo, you have to get in shape and you have to do your bloods, but is there anything else that has to be done?
No, nothing else.
No. Just come
it's
right
just,
in.
You know, if it's smart lipo and it's less invasive, you'll have less bruising, less pain, and a faster recovery.
Okay.
That is why you want that technology.
Yeah, the recovery is key, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this was another big question for our listeners. They sort of know the difference, but we want to ask you, what is the difference between a filler and a Botox?
Okay, so a Botox is basically, it looks like water, okay? Mm-hmm. It's a toxin that's diluted into saline, okay, which is like water, watery substance. And then you inject in the muscles, and this way you don't paralyze the muscles, that you weaken them, because the nerves have nerve endings, and the nerve endings tell the muscle to be activated. So the Botox acts at the nerve ending level, and it weakens the passage of neurotransmitters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So where do people
so
do
you,
Botox?
So you have to inject it specifically in the muscles that are causing the wrinkle. This is why when you have those new creams that you put on the outside and they're going to weaken the muscles, I think it could be potentially very dangerous because you're sort of paralyzing everything, and not specifically the muscles that are causing the wrinkle. For instance, if you have the 11s between the eyebrows, you want to target the corrugator muscles that are activating those 11s. You don't want to put numbing or Botox everywhere because that would lead to too much of a frozen face. So that's the Botox. You have other in the same family. You have other agents. Like Xeomin, and they all basically do the same thing, and they're all in the category of toxins.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, even so, it's not toxic for your body. I will insist upon that. The fillers are basically more viscous. It's a acid hyaluronic, so you can actually see it. They look a little bit milky. It's a little bit like mashed potatoes. And they go in a syringe. And when you inject, you actually are occupying a space. You're occupying the space of a wrinkle, and you fill it up like a...
So you're, like, plumping up.
You're plumping it up.
Right.
Like if you had a valley and you've fill up the bottom.
Yeah. So Botox is mostly for the forehead and...
Botox, forehead around the eyes. You can also put in the muscles that pull the mouth down here, the depressor muscles. A great application for Botox is the neck platysmal lines. Uh-huh. You know, sometimes people look at themselves in pictures of weddings and they're laughing and they have all those lines, especially the skinny persons. And you can minimize those muscles.
And where would we put fillers? Lips,
cheeks, the nasolabial folds, the folds around the mouth, they're called the marionette lines, the lines that go from the corner of your mouth to the to your neckline.
Okay. Now, somebody had written in and asked this. Do you think we'll see the day when Botox will be topical as opposed to injectable?
Well, I was just answering that question. Basically, we might, but I think that Botox, by definition, you want to block the muscle that activates the wrinkle.
So you wouldn't just be able to put it on the muscle? You think people would put it on?
I think it's going to be too unpredictable a result.
Okay. Now, we see this advertised as non-surgical facelift. And is there such a thing?
It is not such a thing. What people call a liquid facelift is basically doing a lift with fillers.
Okay.
So if someone puts on his website liquid facelift, it's just a marketing tool. Okay. Non-surgical facelift with lasers, such as all therapy that are supposed to tone your skin, they really only work for a couple of days while you're swollen, and after that you will not see any difference whatsoever. So I would recommend to not waste your money there.
Right, just a myth.
Okay,
we're going to take one more break, and then we'll come back with a few last questions. Thank you, Dr. Raskin.
Welcome back to Up to the Minute with Nicole on TalkZone.com.
Hi, welcome back. We're here with Dr. Raskin, plastic surgeon in Greenwich, Connecticut. We were just talking a little bit about the myth of a non-surgical facelift. So, Dr. Raskin, just repeat again what you were telling us.
So the non-surgical facelifts, there are liquid lifts. Those are basically fillers. It's no different than doing a filler. You can do change the face dramatically, just placing fillers in the right location or fat. So they'll give you the impression of an uplifted younger face, but they're really not a facelift. In my mind, nothing replaces a facelift, and none of the lasers that have been coming out on the market actually tighten your skin enough to justify the cost of the pain you will go through by doing them.
Great. What can be done to the sagging chin and neck?
Sagging chin and neck. So if you have fat there, Smart Lipo actually is a great option. There is, if it's really a skin problem, I think a mini neck where the incision is just beyond the ear is really going to give you the best long-term result.
Okay, great. So we've been hearing a lot about that in the media. And also the other thing which definitely people are worried about is the unnatural lip. Because that's sort of become a joke, the duck lips, overdoing it. What do you recommend? Do you recommend doing the top, the bottom? How do you do it so that you achieve the natural look?
So the natural lips have to have two-thirds of the volume on the lower lip and one-third on the top. And I think if you have a good injection, they will respect the anatomy and the landmarks. So with that being said, if you use one syringe in your lips and your lips are small or smaller to start with, you will not get a duck lip. If you see a duck lip out in walking around in town, it's people who have done two syringes or more. So it's very easy to avoid that just by not using too much product.
Okay, great. How about any facial products do you recommend? Cleansers or creams? Do you have anything that you sell here?
I have a Neocutis line, which is a very rich cream. that I recommend. I think they do really wonderful mm-hmm. hydration, and they heal a lot of scars.
Wow, I'm going to have a picture of that up on our social media sites. And this is what you recommend?
That's what I recommend. That's what I use on myself.
Okay.
Other than that, I have little tricks that I give to all my good patients, mm-hmm. which is, you know, you can use one of those Clarisonic brushes to clean mm-hmm. with a little bit of grapefruit Neutrogena cleanser. And then I use this I tend to use micro needling.
Yes.
Okay.
I've done that. Yes.
You have done that?
Yes.
Have you done it on yourself?
Well, I have gone to someone who did it, and it's a little bit, but it increases
your collagen.
Yes.
And what I like about this is that it's as powerful as a Fraxel. You can do it at home, uh-huh. and you can order it on Amazon for $30. So if you come to my office for injectables, I'll show you how to use it.
Okay.
And you are on your own. And I have done this for the last 6 months, and I've seen really a big difference in thickness of my skin.
So tell us what that is available on Amazon, what you said.
It's microdermal roller.
Okay.
Okay, and it's the one with the 1 millimeter needle.
Okay.
I would not recommend.
But you bleed after, so.
You don't really bleed if it's well done, and I don't recommend that you go and do it on your own.
Okay, you have to come in.
Come in, I'll show you how to use it. And it's a 1 millimeter needle.
Okay.
And you're going to have pinpoint bleeding after that. You can put your vitamin C.
Right.
Your hyaluronic acid in cream.
Uh-huh.
There's hyaluronic acid in mm-hmm. a bottle mm-hmm. that you can buy. Mm-hmm. And if you do that once a week, you're going to completely change your cream. It gets rid of acne scars.
Right.
It gets rid of a lot of things. It does not get rid of pigmentation.
Right.
Or blood vessels. For that, you need the IPL.
Right.
But this is a wonderful device that every woman should use. It costs nothing. It's great.
Really? Okay.
If you do injectables in my office, I'll turn you on to it.
Okay. Great, because I do. And this cream is great. I was trying to get a picture of it, but I can't seem to get it. But I will put that on the website as well. And these are this is available in your office.
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about the peels that you use?
Okay, so I have a physician assistant, Una, who does peels. She does, and I do also some TCA peels, trichloric acid, and she does salicylic acid peels, a little milder.
Mm-hmm.
The milder peels you can do during lunchtime. What you mm-hmm. do is you clean the outside layers of your skin, the keratin, mm-hmm. and basically you have a new baby skin underneath, and you should do that at least every 3 months.
Okay.
Once you've done the peel, after that, if you do have pigmentation, you can use the IPL mm-hmm. to treat the pigmentation in the blood vessels.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. I did have some issues with somebody. We had talked about the Clarisonic brush, that it was a must-have. And then some people claimed that because they do a lot of peels, it was too rough for their skin. So have you found that?
Right, so they're doing too much.
Too much. Okay. So it's either the peels or the Clarisonic.
Yeah, I would do no more than one peel a month.
Okay.
So. And don't start doing peels at home on your own all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the Clarisonic no more than once a week.
Okay. Oh, no more than once a week.
No,
I understand.
Right,
okay,
because
people were using them every day. And
especially in wintertime, it gets very dry around here, and you know we tend to have dry skin.
Yeah.
And so if you keep doing that, you're just going to exfoliate too much.
So we just talked about this a little, doing too much. Is there such a thing as doing too many peels? So, I mean, how often should we be getting a peel done? If we do them in the office, should we avoid doing them at home?
It's yes, you should not do both. I think it's mm-hmm. every 3 weeks to a month that mm-hmm. you should have a peel.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. People who do buy things on, you know, on the internet and they start doing them at home, they start doing it every day, and then the skin becomes translucent.
Okay. Great. So are there any new things out there in the plastic surgery world that we should be aware of other than this derma roller
thing?
Yeah,
it's not really plastic surgery. Mm-hmm. It's more a dermatology device that I recommend. In the plastic surgery field, I think fat is going to become very big. Fat mm-hmm. is replacing fillers, mm-hmm. and I actually use fat to do breast augmentations, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. either alone or in conjunction with implants. Let's say someone is really very small and they have no breasts at all and they want implants, but they don't want implants to look unnatural. I can add a little fat in the décolleté to give it a more soft, natural look. And that gives you a very, very big difference. I can show you cases of breast augmentations I've done only with fat. Mm-hmm. So if you are someone who's not looking for 2 cup sizes difference, mm-hmm. just a half a size or mm-hmm. one size, doing fat alone is a great technique.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. So I just want to review for our listeners between consultation time and procedure. So if they contacted you in the next few weeks, you could come within a week or so time to get a filler or the Botox. Mm-hmm. And then for more extensive surgeries, you're about a month out.
Right.
Okay. Exactly. And how should our listeners and readers get in touch with you?
Well, I have a website. It's elsaraskinmd.com. And the phone number is 203-861-6620.
Wonderful. Dr. Raskin will have all of this up on the blog. Dr. Raskin's card will be on the blog, and also we will have it on our Talk Zone page. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. We have learned so much, and we hope that we will have some of our listeners come in.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Nicole.
Talk to you soon. Thank you.